And back here on the Mighty 690 KGGF on this Wednesday, Connor Harbit with you. Hope you're having a good morning. If not, let's make it a good morning. And here to help you do that are a couple of guests from the K-State Extension Office, Jacob Weber, and didn't catch your name.
I'm Dave Instrance. I'm the Diversified Ag and Natural Resource Agent for the Wildcat District.
All right, and so nice to meet you. And so we will be here for the next 30 minutes or so. We'll be here for about 15 minutes up to the top of the hour, and then we'll take it off to Fox News and a local newscast, and then we'll be back at about 8:10 for another 15 minutes or so. Don't forget, though, the phone lines are open if you do have any questions, 251-6909 or 1-800-252-5443. So, Mr. Weber, didn't get a whole lot of chance to talk before we went on the air this morning, but I didn't ask you what was going on, and I know you had something because you started to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. I noticed a fall webworm nest in a tree on the drive over this morning. Of course, the fog and everything makes that web nest appear a lot brighter because It collects the dew and reflects the light a lot better. So I talked about fall webworm, the first generation, of course. So there was a few of them around. I thought it might be a little bit more prevalent than what it was. And I know the second generation now is active. There's two generations per summer. And so there might be quite a few fall webworm nests. I know a lot of folks get excited about fall webworms because of the ugly nests in the trees, the web nests out at the ends of the branches. And some folks I know over the years have gotten very excited. Some of them try to burn them out of the tree. I've heard of one person that actually injured themselves doing that. Others have cut them out of the tree, cut the branches off and to destroy the nests. And that's just maybe gone a bit too far because fall webworms, especially the fall generation, have very little effect on the health of the tree. They just make it look ugly. I remember several years ago, the fall webworms were so prevalent, they even the web nests actually covered many of the trees completely with webs. And that was right close to Halloween, so it gave a little, we call the word ambiance, to the occasion.
Yeah, sure.
Because it looked really ghastly, ghostly appearance. But again, these caterpillars, they're leaf eaters. They only eat the fleshy part of the leaf blade. They have no effect on the actual branches or twigs or the significant tissue on the tree. Fall webworm can cause a little bit of issue from the first generation if it's very heavy, especially in commercial nut production, pecans in particular. They really are fond of that particular tree. And heavy defoliation midsummer can reduce nut quality and also significantly reduce nut production the following year. So pecan producers are out there controlling the insects for home landscapes. The thing to do is if you can avoid the temptation of spraying the tree and spending money spraying the tree, I would suggest or highly recommend doing that. If you can avoid the temptation of burning the web nest out of the tree or cutting the branches off, which does more harm to the tree than the insect does, I would suggest that the homeowner do that. If you really don't like the web nest and you have a smaller tree and a long bamboo pole or something like that, put a nail or something in the end of the pole crosswise so it kind of protrudes out, and you can have something to hook onto the web nest and you just rake them, break the nest up and rake the worms out of the tree, and that pretty much destroy the caterpillars. That would be the best thing to do, or just put your hands in your pocket and say gee whiz,
yeah,
and go on with your life.
So these web nests, is there any harm that comes with them, or are they just sort of a aesthetic thing that people don't like?
It's aesthetic. It makes the tree look ugly. It's not that harmful to the tree itself, all webworms. I've had one person say that they're going to kill all the trees in the country. And webworms go through cycles. They've been here before. They'll be here again in heavy numbers. They're controlled naturally by egg parasites, insects that parasitize the egg nest. That's a primary factor of controlling them. It goes in cycles because the predatory insects follow the population. In other words, when the population of eggs is abundant, then predatory insects have a food source and they will multiply in number. And then when their numbers increase significantly to the point where they completely almost eradicate all the eggs before they have a chance to mature into little caterpillars, then that population, the caterpillar crop population, crashes, and then the parasite population crashes behind it, and then the caterpillar population starts building again. But it takes several years between cycles, and we're due for another cycle coming up here. So that's why I'm making a prediction that this can happen. So,
yeah.
Okay, do we have a call?
Thought we had a call, but somebody picked it up, so we'll see if they send it on over to me here in just a second. But we'll go ahead and bring it over to you, Davin, as you said you're the diversity officer, correct?
Yes, Diversified Ag and Natural Resources.
All right, and so we'll get to that, and we'll talk about what you do here in just a little bit, but we do have a call, so we'll go ahead and take it and see if we have a question here. Hello, you're on. Hello. This is not Open Line. Open Line starts at 8:30 today.
Oh, yeah.
Jacob is here. It's not Open Line, but you can ask Jacob a question. He's here right now.
It's too early to do anything for your rose bushes. And of course, do you have hybrid tea or do you have knockout roses or shrub roses of that type? A few of each. The only one of major concern that you would do any winter preparation for in this area would be your hybrid teas. Your really, I call them wimpy roses. They are susceptible to almost everything, including the common cold. Not really, but they are not terribly winter hardy. So you really don't want to do anything at this point in time. It's too early. But when we have a few good hard freezes, when temperatures haven't dropped down below 20 degrees yet, after that, and then the roses are pretty much fairly dormant at that point. You could, if you want to protect the base of the plant, some really nice, good quality soil that's fairly loose. You just mound it up over top of the base of the rows up to cover the graft union, that knot right at the soil line, and go up the stem at least maybe 8 to 10 inches high. So you're making a little a soil volcano around that rose. But this is after you have several good hard freezes so that rose is dormant. So, and at that point, you could, if the rose, top of the rose, this is going to be a shrub rose hybrid tea, you might trim the top back a little bit, maybe to about 2.5 feet tall. And at that point, probably some, if there's a broad spreading crown on the thing, you might thin it out a little bit so it doesn't have such a sail on it. And then after the temperature really drops down, you get some almost mid-teens or lower temperatures, then you could probably put a light mulch. I would put a really clean mulch, like a chopped oak leaves or something like that, over top of that soil mound, and then mound it up a little bit higher, maybe up to about 18 inches around that shrub rose. And at that point, you leave it until the following spring, when you start getting a little bit of bud swell. And then you would gradually remove that mulch and the soil. And hopefully you get to the point where you don't have any real hard freezing temperatures after that. You want to make sure that you get this soil and everything removed before you get any significant shoot growth. because if you don't and you have significant shoot growth, those shoots will pop right off when you're removing the soil, and that would end up with more injury to the plant. But essentially on a hybrid tea, you're trying to protect the lower part of the scion, that would be the desirable part, from cold temperature injury should the temperature drop below zero and be significant enough to damage the plant. So blackberry pruning is a little different, and of course right now you wouldn't be doing any type of pruning on it, but for the semi-erect or erect thornless blackberries, is that what you have? That's what you have. Typically on the new shoot growth that occurs in the spring, midsummer, when those shoots get about, or those canes get about 35 to 40 inches tall, you pinch. In other words, that soft tissue on the leading point, the apical point of that shoot, you just break it off about half an inch to 2 inches off the top. You just pop it off. And what that does is that destroys the apical hormones, that stops the apical hormones that are produced in that bud, that suppresses lateral shoot development. And once you do that, then your lateral shoots start to pop and grow. And what you're desiring is maybe 4 or 5 good lateral canes that come off of that primary cane. And those lateral canes are what you would prune during the winter. Usually you would delay that until about after Valentine's Day. And those lateral canes, you might want to cut them back to about 18 to 24 inches long, leaving about 3 or 4 of those lateral canes per primary cane. And that would be your flower cane for the second year. That's going to produce your flowers and fruit. And after harvest, after you're done picking all those wonderful blackberries off of that flower cane, and you cut it off at the ground because it's worthless. It's done. It will not produce anything more, and it will die. So it's useless. Every year you're going to get new primal canes that are going to start growing, and those are the ones that you pinch to get the lateral shoots, and then the following day after Valentine's Day, you prune those back, those laterals back to about 18 to 24 inches, saving about 3 or 4 for every cane, and you want to keep about maybe 2 or 3 good hardy canes per plant on your blackberry. You do this year after year. It's a 2-year cycle on each one of those canes. First year is primal cane, the second year is flora cane, and after that you cut them off. Okay, we got a break.
Thank you very much for calling. So we will need to take a break. We'll talk with you a little bit, Dave, a little bit more after the break, and we'll of course take your calls if you have them, 251-6909 or 1-800-252-5443. But until then, Fox News at the top of the hour, and also local newscast from Interim News Director Matt Jordan coming up. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Back here once again on the Mighty 690 KGGF, Connor Harbutt taking you through your Wednesday morning. Just a reminder that once we complete our interview here, and I'll get to that in just a second, we will start open line about 8:40 or so. We'll then have to take a break at about 9:10, as we do have Candy Westbrook from the Coffeyville Chamber of Commerce in. She'll be talking about what's going on in Coffeyville and the surrounding area. But then from there, we will have open line unimpeded until 11 a.m. today. But for now, we do have a couple of guests back once again here in the KGGF studios, Jacob Weber and David Strauss. Of course, in the first break, we talked with Jacob quite a bit more, and so we're going to turn our attention over to David this time around. We were trying to talk, and then, of course, we got that call just before the break. But again, your position is diversity officer, and I didn't quite catch it the last time around.
Yes, I'm the Diversified Agriculture and Natural Resource Agent, so that's kind of a broad title, mm-hmm. but I cover small acreage agriculture production, non-traditional ag, which can cover a variety of things, beekeeping, and also diversified agriculture production on those small acreages. So if someone's looking for management strategies with small livestock or poultry, along with having fruit trees or a garden, kind of planning that layout and what's feasible on the property they have. And then natural resources covers wildlife, watershed, pond management. Last month with the warmer weather, I received a lot of questions about pond management regarding blue-green algae and aquatic weeds. So really a variety of things.
All right. And so it does look like we have a call here. So we'll go ahead and take it and see if this is actually, well, they picked up some. We'll go ahead and see if somebody comes and taps on my window.
Sounds good.
We've got some time here. It is fall is approaching. And so in your position, what is one of the more important things that's going to be talked about a lot more as we kind of head into the later months of the year?
Well, I'm fairly new to this position. So, of course, I'll see what questions people come to me with in fall of the year. But in the fall, hunting season starts, so of course that's really popular. People start planning food plots for deer. And then also, they may have problems with rodents and different pests as the weather cools down. Mice and rats are more likely to get into homes or buildings looking for someplace warm during the winter, and other wildlife-related questions.
All right, and so we do have a caller, so we'll go ahead and see what they have to say. Hello, call, you're on with David and Jacob.
Very careful. You can use glyphosate herbicide such as Roundup or Kills All Cleanup, etc. Follow label directions. This you would spray very light, just enough to wet the foliage of the weedy plants, and make sure that you do not get it on the tree itself, including the trunk, the roots, the exposed roots. Very important, because you can get injury, and definitely don't spray to the point of soil saturation or point where the material goes into the soil in solution that can be taken up by the roots, and you can permanently damage your tree. You can do that. You can use that particular product. That probably would be one of the safest products you can use. There is another specifically grass herbicide called Post. Cestoxidim is the active ingredient. Follow label directions. That's the only grass herbicide that I'm aware of that you can use on fruit and vegetable crops. That would be a little bit less potential to damage the tree if you got it on the tree. But either one of those products you can use. Be sure to follow label directions, especially if you're using Post. Follow label directions regarding the pre-harvest interval on that particular product. There's another product called Fusilate that is a grass killer. It is only labeled for ornamental crops, ornamental plants. It's not labeled for any food producing crops, so you cannot use that particular product. So be sure to read the label before you buy the product. You can use that. Alternatively, you can use a weed barrier fabric over top of the ground to manage the grassy plants, and it does not need a mulch on top of it. You can just lay it directly on top of the ground, pin it in place, and it kills the grass plants by shading or preventing sunlight to get to the leaves of the grass plants. That would be a non-chemical means of controlling the invasive grasses. The purpose here, you want to get that tree to be well established so it can actually shade the ground and have the upper hand on the grass itself. So that's what I'd suggest. Okay. Yep, thanks for calling.
All right, so we do actually have another caller, so we'll go ahead and take that one now. Hello, you're on with Jacob and David.
suckers coming up from the base of the plant typically would indicate that your peach tree is a grafted tree, and it's grafted onto a dwarfing rootstock, and that dwarfing rootstock is trying to grow. Those suckers should be pruned off as soon as they appear. That'd be the best thing. Definitely want to prune them off every winter, remove them. You're going to have this problem forever until the tree dies. Yes, you need to cut those off, because if you don't, that rootstock is going to overgrow the scion, and the scion will die. The scion is the part of the tree that you harvest the fruit from. And if that dies, then you're left with a rootstock, which is a non-productive rootstock, and you just lose your entire tree. So yes, those suckers need to be removed when they appear. And it's going to be a permanent problem. Do not try to kill them with any type of herbicide or any type of material, because that may injure your tree permanently. Yeah, just clip them off. Just use your imagination and try to prune it in a way that will keep it a little bit more productive. You thin and try to keep adequate space between the branches so that you get plenty of sunlight penetration. Sounds like your tree may have been, if it wasn't a grafted tree, it has its own, it's growing on its own roots, and so it'll remain a very productive tree. Okay. I tell you what, just let it grow and enjoy it, because that's probably all you're going to get. Yeah. You just make a little bit of attempt to kind of thin it out a little bit, but it's 30 years is a long life for a peach tree. Usually peach commercial orchards don't last that long in a given slope. Yeah, it's been a rough year, actually, for a lot of crops. And you got peaches. Did you get a peach pie out of it by any chance? All right. That sounds good. You had a successful year then. Okay. Thanks for calling.
All right, so a couple of questions there. And don't forget, you can always call in 251-6909 or 1-800-252-5443. But returning to Dave in here, I heard you talking about the farm bill, and you know, sitting on this side of the board, I hear we have a lot of ag-related programming, and I hear about this farm bill a lot. And as somebody who's not really involved with that side of the whole life, I don't really know a whole lot about it. So kind of talk about a little bit with what's going on there for some of our listeners who may not be as updated on that.
Yeah, the 2018 Farm Bill is what we've been talking about, and we've started to have information meetings on. We just had one yesterday in Parsons, Kansas, with the Farm Bill team that came down from K-State main campus there in Manhattan. And it was an information session for farmers to really just provide them information on what has changed from the 2014 Farm Bill and what options they have. And there will also be another meeting in Montgomery County next Tuesday morning at the Extension Office in Independence. So the Farm Bill is through FSA, and Extension also helps out with it in helping producers figure out which program is best for them and work through their options depending on what crops they grow and what their yields are and what their operation has been doing for the past couple of years.
All right, and so it looks like we do have another call here. We'll wait and see about that, but you said 2018 Farm Bill, so this has been in the works since about last year then.
Yeah, it's called the 2018 Farm Bill because they pass it in 2018 for the legislation end of it, and then they work on developing the different programs, and then the sign-up period starts in a couple months, and it goes through March of next year.
Okay, and so we'll go ahead and take this call here, and we'll go a little bit over 8:30 today. We've got plenty of time if this one does go past. So don't feel rushed or anything, as we have 3 minutes to 8:30. But hello, call. You're on with David and Jacob.
That's a difficult question for me to answer. Okay, cut the pear open and look at the seed. When the seeds start changing from white to brown, then you know it's really close. Now, some pears ripen correctly on the tree, and some of them don't. The ones that don't are the real difficult ones, because you want to pick them when they're mature, but before the stone cells develop. The stone cells, like when you bite into a pear and it's gritty, the stone cells have developed and they're never going to get soft, so it's going to be a gritty pear. You want to do that before they develop. So when the pear is fully mature, these type of pears, you harvest them and you put them in cold storage. If you have a refrigerator, you chill them, keep them around 35 degrees Fahrenheit for about 4 to 6 weeks. And then when you're ready to ripen them, you bring them out and let them come up to room temperature. Let them set till they're fully ripe. And that's how you enjoy those pears. I don't know what kind of pear you have. If you leave them, if you have pears that do not develop a heavy stone cell, but do ripen without that chilling, you can harvest those, but you want to harvest them when they're mature, but before they ripen, because if you leave them on the tree, they'll be overripe on the inside and just about ripe on the outside, and then they don't taste very good. It's a difficult thing to do, but pears generally are harvested before, or when they're fully mature, but before they ripen, so that they can ripen off the tree. The exceptions are the sugar type pears that you pick off the tree when they're fully ripe, and you can tell those by just taste testing those. Okay. A Bartlett. A kefir is an old-fashioned pear that you would definitely harvest before it's ripe, and let it ripen off the tree, because it will develop those stone cells. The Bartlett is a little better pear, better eating quality. Again, that one you would harvest when it's fully mature, but before it's ripe, so that it can ripen off the tree as well. The kefir probably would benefit from the chilling process. The Bartlett does not need it, that's my understanding anyway. So some years it's perfect and some years it's not. But they are good fruit to eat. Kefir is a good old-fashioned pear that does quite well in our area. There's a lot of old trees around, and it seems like they really produce a lot of pears. Yep. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, caller. And that will do it. That's all the time we have here today. Again, thank you to Jacob Weber and David Srantz for coming in and speaking with us today. And we'll hear from you guys next week.
Thanks for hosting us.
Thank you.
All right. We'll go ahead and send it on over to a break. We got Fox News coming up here at 8:30. And when we come back, it'll be time for Open Line here on the Mighty 690 KGGF.